Hi, it's Ari. I know it's been a while since I did an episode of Novum, but I've been finishing up my semester for my master's program in science fiction. And during the last few weeks, I've given a few talks, including one at the university's postgraduate conference called House of the Future: The Manipulative Art of Advertising and Science Fiction. And this interest in the combination of advertising and science fiction, both how science fiction talks about advertising and how advertising uses science fictional elements, it's something that's interested me for a few months by this point, and the interest does not seem to be in any danger of dying out. And this is something that's extremely understudied, which is why I've decided to do two episodes on it. They're both going to be rather short, and it's my hope that you come out of both of these episodes as entirely convinced as I am that advertising and science fiction are somewhat sinister bedfellows. Corporate science fiction. It must be time for Novum.
All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can.
Common misconception of science fiction is that the majority of works are set in these horrific government-led dystopias. But apart from some pretty famous examples of that, 1984, The Handmaid's Tale, to name a couple, that's not exactly true. So much science fiction is instead obsessed with the idea that we're becoming a corporate dystopia, where any semblance of government power has been superseded by corporate control. Like, instead of the NSA surveilling us and coming to knock down our door because we mention rebellion online, think of it more like this scene from the film Minority Report.
Good evening, John. You can move the old-fashioned.
John Anderson.
Calls provides gourmet cuisine.
John Anderson. You can use a Guinness right about now.
Stressed out, John Anderson.
Escape from it all, Harrison.
Get away, John Anderson.
If you're wondering what's happening here, Tom Cruise's character John Anderton is walking through a mall in a future in which advertising has become personalized to your shopping profiles. Companies know your name, your preferences, and what you've bought before in order to create a pointed advertisement that feels like it's targeting you directly. Okay, maybe this concept was securely within the realm of science fiction back when the movie was made in 2002. But 15 years later, this infamous scene from Minority Report doesn't seem at all far-fetched. Science fiction inevitably ends up predicting many things, but it's especially been accurate in predicting how advertising has evolved. So I thought it might be fun to take a closer look today. And also, I've recently noticed that the last three science fiction books I've read all featured advertising so prominently. And each of them was fascinated with how corporate power will evolve within our world. They asked, what will happen when companies are afforded the same or greater cutting-edge technologies as citizens? How will they use it? And can we assume that they will always play fair with us? This episode is part one of a two-part series looking at the intimate relationship between advertising and science fiction. In part one, I want to first know, what does it mean to advertise? Because it's not something we think about every day. Then I want to find out, why is corporate control such a huge topic in science fiction? And I really want to take a look at a few examples of stories which show a future literally under the control of advertising agencies. And lastly, I want to ask, is this really all just science fiction? Or is it our reality? Okay, so why do companies spend money on advertisements? Companies advertise to promote brand awareness or to make customers aware of new products or sales. There are infinite reasons why a brand should advertise, and obviously the why for an energy company such as GE will differ entirely from McDonald's. But perhaps the reason that companies advertise primarily is to put out a message into the world that is entirely under their control. It isn't subject to the spin of anyone but the company. For inside the advertisement is a space in which to push a particularly effective message. Inside this space, you'll see smiling faces, laughing children, beautiful clear skies, or clean, tidy kitchens. Essentially, it's a fantasy, and it can be a vision of utopia.
With wave touch controls and an induction hybrid cooktop that boils water in 90 seconds, you can be even more amazing.
Now, they might not all be saying it, but advertisements are insinuating that you too can join this utopia. All you have to do is step through the portal, which is located inside the product that they're selling or inside the company. It's pretty obvious that it is not so easy to transform the world or to be truly happy inside yourself. We know that it would take a very rare product to enact the type of transformation that we see in these ads. But somehow, even though we may know this, we're still influenced by visions of people achieving satisfaction and pleasure through a Dorito chip or a new car. So we have this idea of the advertisement as a somewhat sinister tool of psychological manipulation. And it's no wonder that the advertisement has featured so heavily in science fiction, which is primarily interested in how aspects of culture and technology can be transformative agents within our lives. Of course, most science fiction won't just introduce one new thing into the world and measure our reactions. It's not usually so simple as that. Instead, the effect of a new thing, or as we call it, a novum, is filtered through the powerful people who will utilize it for their ends. For example, let's take the novum of a space elevator, the idea of which has been around for over 100 years, but it's very popular to portray this in science fiction. The basic concept is that we could eliminate the need for bulky spacecraft equipment that just affords us the ability to leave the Earth's atmosphere, and after which is jettisoned back down to Earth. It's wasteful. A space elevator would be a structure attached to a point on the equator extending to a point over 22,000 miles above the Earth's surface. It would make for efficient space travel, and that alone would make for an excellent novum in science fiction. But the extraordinary economic benefits, including the marketability of leisure travel to space and the potential to easily import rare off-world elements, are to some what makes a space elevator such an alluring investment. Philip Bragan, author of the book Leaving Earth by Space Elevator, says, "The first country to deploy a space elevator will have a 95% cost advantage and could potentially control all space activity." Kim Stanley Robinson's novel Red Mars, about the long-term colonization of Mars, takes a fairly dismal view on how a space elevator could be ruthlessly exploited by corporate interests. Not long after the colonization process has begun on Mars, transnational corporations from a crippled Earth have a substantial financial interest on Mars. They're making money from importing precious natural resources from Mars's surface, and from inundating Mars with immigrants. They figure they can accomplish both tasks with greater ease by constructing a space elevator. Robinson cites a mixture of real and fictional corporations that have stake in such an investment, such as Amex, Oroco, Subarashi, and Mitsubishi. This corporate awareness in science fiction is one area in which novels can make direct contact with reality and push an explicitly satirical agenda. Cyberpunk especially obsesses over brand name, computer hardware, sleeping pods. Just read Neuromancer or Moxieland for as much brand name saturation as you can imagine. But one reason that cyberpunk is an important subgenre of SF is that it displays an overall awareness that products have to come from somewhere, and they exist for a reason. And that reason is not always altruistic. In some sci-fi novels and films, it's enough to portray simple corporate control. It's effective, it gets a reaction, and in the novel or film, we see a backlash from some, but we assume that most have bought into this world of consumerism completely. I'm interested in how this majority has come to accept the constant presence of corporations in their world, and thus a culture of blatant consumerism that in many cases looks minimally different from the one we currently know. Well, one answer is that they accomplish this normalization through advertising to the public. This is well-explored ground in science fiction film, a genre which has basically decided that Times Square is the visual epitome of futurism. The presence of giant billboard screens, blaring garish advertisements, in movies, this almost screams the future. Think of Ridley Scott's Blade Runner and the massive holographic billboards that appear throughout the cyberpunk-inspired cityscape. There's one with the familiar Coca-Cola logo. A blimp floats lazily overhead, constantly broadcasting a Japanese woman putting a pill into her mouth.
A new life awaits you in the off-world colony. The chance to begin again.
Of course, corporate control is a theme throughout Blade Runner and its source material, as the Rosen Corporation has flooded the market with androids that cannot be distinguished from humans, purely for their own financial interest. In Blade Runner, watching as the camera descends from the flashy ads down to the city's grimy underbelly, the separation of rich from poor could not be more distinct. Billboard advertisements like those in Blade Runner appear everywhere in film. From iRobot to AI artificial intelligence, it's clear that one could barely create a truly futuristic city setting without the omnipresence of advertisements. And I think very rarely are these advertisements simply utilized for their aesthetic value. Their presence is a microcosm of one of the objectives of science fiction as a whole, to satirize our world through pointed exaggeration. The Steven Spielberg film Minority Report, based on another Philip K. Dick novel, features particularly frightening scenes that imagine a world in which billboards and television advertisements are able to adapt entirely to our desires. Some stories take their satire of consumer culture much further. In Frederick Pohl and Sam Kornbluth's The Space Merchants, the government has been entirely usurped by corporations. Advertising has become ubiquitous and aggressive, and addictive qualities are liberally added to consumer products. Kids are given cigarette rations from a young age. I'd say it's pretty clear that this isn't your average government-led dystopia. In fact, it's the very absence of any sort of democratic government from this world that is creating the human rights violations. This is practically the capitalist version of George Orwell's nightmare vision of communism. And it's important to note that to many, none of these futures seems all that far off. We already have our Times Square and Piccadilly Circus, and an article from Smithsonian Magazine cites Blade Runner as a forewarning for how Los Angeles could end up buried beneath billboards. As for Minority Report, these personalized ads don't seem so ludicrous to us living in the 21st century. After all, the sale of our internet search history to advertising agencies is pretty well documented. It's a phenomenon you can see for yourself when ads begin appearing on your Facebook that oddly resemble yesterday's Google search. And what about the crazy future presented in The Space Merchants? While corporations already have stake in our government through lobbying and gifts to politicians, and in some states, corporations are even afforded the free speech rights of a person. Now, whether this all makes you hopeful or frightened really depends on your political and ethical leanings. But if you can deny the manipulative powers of all types of advertisements, on your psychology and spending habits, then you must be pretty strong indeed. I wonder if you'll be strong enough, however, when in 20 years, technologies you can hardly fathom today are utilized by companies in order to sell product. Already, advertising has embedded itself in increasingly subtle ways into YouTube sponsorships, video games, and even VR. These methods will become increasingly difficult to spot and creative, which in itself we must give credit to as a type of innovation. Science fiction is not all about depicting wild, fantastical futures. Far from it. I went into this pretty thoroughly in my latest episode on Rick and Morty. But science fiction's greatest strength may be its ability to exaggerate reality in order to show truth. Again, let's go back for a minute to George Orwell's 1984. Orwell feared the trend towards autocratic systems of government and a media which increasingly had little use for truth. Thus, he wrote a seminal work warning against the type of dystopia that might result if citizens were not diligent and aware. Orwell briefly worked in a propaganda department of the BBC, which later served as the inspiration for the novel's Ministry of Truth. But I wonder, as corporations like Google are ubiquitous and practically omniscient, and Apple's net worth of over $700 billion makes the company richer than most countries, have advertising agencies rather become the new propaganda machines, the new ministries of truth? As always, science fiction is on the case, but it's up to us to be diligent and aware. Miniature episode has just been part one of a larger series on science fiction and advertising. Our next show will flip the script and focus on science fiction in real advertising, and how advertisers in our world utilize science fiction in commercials in order to sell product and actually influence the future. Thank you for listening to another Novum. This is my 14th episode, actually, and I'm always evolving and figuring out how to craft episodes that are interesting to you. If you'd like to check out other episodes of the program, which explore all kinds of fascinating topics within science fiction, you can find those on our Facebook page, on our Podomatic page, or on iTunes. You can subscribe, and of course, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email on novumpodcast@gmail.com. or leave a review on iTunes. This episode was written and produced by me, Ari Brin, and our music was done by Christopher McIntyre. Again, thank you for listening, and I will see you on our next episode.